So some of you are kind of out of your comfort zone. It's like, where are these words? Where is, you know? And we're going to continue. Just kind of challenging people on the edge of your comfort zone. It's all good. But part of what we're going to continue with is the reading that I have for today. I wanted to introduce a little bit because it's from Hebrew scriptures. And I know a lot of times, I want to be sure, especially new people know that, very often we don't use biblical scriptures in, this congregation most Sundays. But we are today because in recent years, I really like preaching from the lectionary. Does anybody know that word? Anybody know what the lectionary is? Some people do. Most people don't. What the lectionary is it's something that a lot of Christian congregations have in common, where they pull four readings from the Hebrew scriptures or the Christian scriptures. It's usually two from the Hebrew scriptures, two from the Christian scriptures. There's usually a psalm in there. There's usually a passage from Paul, one from the gospel, one from something else in the Hebrew scriptures. So that's what I've been doing for years now, because I like having that guidance and that challenge of, you know, saying, here, preach on that. And so what I chose today of the four that were offered in the lecture, I chose one from Jeremiah, so one of the Hebrew prophets. So I want y'all to just understand a little bit about why you're hearing from Jeremiah today. Okay. It's Jeremiah chapter 31, verses 31 through 34. That's right. This is Jeremiah speaking on behalf of God. That's right. The time is coming when I will make a brand new covenant with Israel and Judah. It won't be a repeat of the covenant I made with their ancestors when I took their hand and led them out of the land of Egypt. They broke that covenant, even though I did my part as their master. This brand new covenant that I will make with Israel when the time comes, I will put my law within them, write it on their hearts, and be their God. And they will be my people. They will no longer go around setting up schools to teach each other about God. They will know me firsthand, the dull and the bright, the smart and the slow. I'll wipe the slate clean for each of them. I'll forget they ever sinned. So what's happening in this passage is that Jeremiah was writing, this passage, this book of Jeremiah was written in 6th century before the Common Era, okay? So what was happening historically in that time is that the Israeli people were, and Judah were, really gone far astray. They were abusing the vulnerability of the poor in their society. Their military was overused. And God, according to Jeremiah, was not impressed. Saw the people, the most vulnerable people in society, being abused. And calls people to task in this passage through all of Jeremiah. It's all bad news all the time. But what happens is that what he's talking about when he says that the people, he's going to create this new covenant with the people, that's because what happened when Israel went so far astray is the Babylonian Empire comes in and destroys the temple in Jerusalem. Destroys their most sacred place. It's gone. 586. Decimated. And the upper class of Israel is taken into exile. So the entire country is left in ashes. And when they're taken into exile, they are taken for 70 years. Into Babylon. Do y'all know the song? By the waters of Babylon, we lay down and wept for thee, Zion. We remember thee, remember, we remember thee, Zion. right? I mean, just this gut-wrenching song. And it comes, that song is written about this time of the people from Jerusalem who were taken away from their homeland for 70 years. So what Jeremiah is talking about is he's saying, I will welcome you back, even though you have done such terrible things. You have destroyed everything that we agreed to. We had this covenant. We had this thing going. It was 10 commandments, right? That was what we agreed that you would live by. I set it in stone for you. That should have been enough. You should have been able to remember. It was only 10. Come on. You should have been able to remember it. So God is not impressed with the reality of how this played out, how the most vulnerable in society were mistreated, and the military became overused. And so what happens as a result is that what God is promising is that you will be welcomed back, and we're going to do things differently now. Now, what's extraordinary about this passage from a biblical geek perspective is that God changes God's mind in this passage. Right, that doesn't happen very often, right? It's a pretty big deal for the character of God in the Hebrew scriptures or anywhere else to change God's mind. And that's basically what he's doing. He's like, you know, I've seen how this all worked out, and y'all weren't able to follow through with it. You know, I did the focus groups, got the customer feedback back. It's like really didn't work, the whole like writing on stone. So what I'm gonna do now, we're gonna do business differently, and I'm gonna write it in your hearts so that you cannot forget. There won't be any stone to leave behind. There won't be any excuse to forget what we have agreed to. And what we have agreed to is who you say you want to be. I'm not asking you to do something that's so very difficult. I'm just asking you not to take advantage of the most vulnerable among you. But clearly, this is difficult. Clearly, when left to your own devices, things can unravel and get to the point where you can be invaded and taken over and exiled and all of that. So this is God's solution. I'm going to write it on your hearts. So I want to look at this question of what it is that causes us to have our integrity, our greatest hopes and dreams for our life, to unravel, for us to be able to forget. So like any good ethical question, inquiry, I want to start with, why do people do the right thing? Why? What motivates people to do the right thing? And it's a real question. I actually want to hear from you. Go ahead, yeah? Okay. So so it's not so much the thing itself, it's the ease with which you have access to doing the right thing. Okay. It's a sign of courage when you do the right thing, and it's very difficult. Yeah. The Marines define courage as not being fearless, but taking action in the face of fear, being afraid and taking action anyway. Yeah. No. Yeah, go ahead.
I would say empathy, the ability to feel what other people feel.
Yeah. So being able to empathize causes you to do the right thing, being able to see or feel something from someone else's perspective. What else? Yeah.
Well, feeling connected, it's easy with friends. When I love people, I'm like, oh, here, take money.
Mm-hmm. So feeling a connection with the person, there's an ease there maybe about feeling that connection, having that empathy in a way that with strangers, it's easier to just not feel that connection and that ease. You don't know what you're getting into, maybe that kind of feeling. Yeah, thank you, yes.
Sometimes, at least for me,
Okay. So it's kind of the way that you view yourself. You can, it's like an integrity thing about just how it feels. Like, can I sleep tonight if I do this or don't do this? Yeah. So your own conscience. So what the question is, what motivates people to do the right thing? It doesn't necessarily, you don't have to just be speaking from your personal experience too. You could just be saying, you know, what you observe in the world, what motivates people to do the right thing. Yeah. So if just being aware, being educated, like know that sometimes ignorance can lead us to do I'm just doing the flip side here. Sometimes ignorance can cause us to do the wrong thing, and not realize it, and not that that's a great excuse, but yes, it's true. Yes. You feel it inside, right? Yeah, and that's basically a big part of what this sermon is about, is that kind of visceral feeling that we have when we're in and out of integrity, right? Yeah, yeah. Great, thank you. Yes. Yes, so thank you. I was kind of looking for, like, who's going to go down here with me? Because, you know, a lot of people, like, we do the right thing because it's good for me. Or we do the right thing because I'm avoiding punishment. Like, it's the law. Like, I don't want to get a ticket. Like, you know, just like that, you know, y'all are kind of, you know, you're doing the big, you know, concept of conscience and all that. But there's also, like, no, I'm doing the right thing because, you know, I just don't want to get caught. I don't want to get in trouble. I'm going to do the right thing because, you know, I'm going to, you know, help you out when you're out of town because we're neighbors. And when I'm out of town in a couple months, you're going to help me out. You know, there's kind of like a reciprocity could be a motivator too about why we do the right thing. So there's all the self-interest in doing the right thing too, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. People think they're doing the right thing, and other people look at it and say, that's absolutely evil.
Mm-hmm.
Without saying anything about the event at the temple right now, you know, they think they're doing the right thing.
Yeah, and they would say the exact same thing about us. Exactly. And so, yeah, so having that perspective about sometimes we're doing the right thing, and it's a very subjective view, right? Very, you know, so we have to, and part of what I love about interpreting these scriptures is I'm interpreting it from a UU perspective, right? And that's part of what I love about kind of reclaiming these scriptures is being able to say, like, no, I think we need to be wrestling with some of this stuff too. I don't want to leave it just up to, you know, some other people to interpret. Like, we have as much of a right and responsibility to interpret these words as anybody else. Yes. Peer pressure. Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. No, that is a huge part of it, is that, like, what motivates, because we want to look good, right? We don't want to feel ashamed. We want to look good. So we do the right thing for those reasons, right? Absolutely. Thank you. So here, one more. Yeah, go ahead.
Another way to word that might be, yeah, having a supportive environment.
Yeah. Peer pressure can absolutely be, you know, because a lot of times people do the wrong thing because they come from an environment where the right thing was never modeled for them. So they're back and there's in this ignorance bubble of, like, no, if you want this, you better go, you know, yeah, break a law to get it. Whatever you need to do, that's what everybody's doing. So it doesn't seem like it's out of integrity because that's how people live around you. That's what's modeled. Is that kind of in line with what you're saying? Okay. Yeah. So I think that, okay, one more. Go ahead. Yes. Yeah, please. Yeah, for recognition. So to avoid shame or to get a reward, right? You know, very often we do the right thing and, you know, sometimes we get paid for it, or we get a thumbs up at the very, you know, we get those rewards, we get those carrots, and we avoid the sticks, like, right? So what I want to point out about this is that the low end of this spectrum is motivated by external things. Okay, so like the way people see us, or the money that we're going to get, or the ticket we're going to avoid, right? Those are all external motivators. And then as you go up, it gets a little more internal. It gets more like, well, I'm doing the right thing because of these relationships, because I know these people. I'm doing the right thing because if I act this way, I would want everyone acts this way, the world would be a better place. So I'm going to act this way because I want to set an example. That's a pretty high level. Now, the highest level is coming from a sense of, this is just the right thing to do. Nobody's going to see me do it. I'm not going to tell anybody I did it. It's just, you have this sense of duty. That's like the gold standard. Like, we might have like one moment like that in our whole life. You know, I mean, that's way up here, okay? But I just want you to get a sense of how we do the right thing as human beings in this whole range of reasons, and that it goes from internal from external motivators to internal motivators. And this highest level is the thing that Jeremiah was talking about it being written on your heart. That's what God was promising to do. To say, I'm not going to do that whole tablet thing that I did that I thought was a really good idea. That's, you know, we need, you know, point two. Let's have it written on your heart instead. Written on your heart. So you know when you promise something, like you give your word to something, or you take a vow, pretty heavy, right? Like you feel, even if it's like, I'm going to be there at 3:00, like you, right? You're on the hook. Or I'm going to be with you for the rest of my life. Or like the guys that I work with and women that I work with, they're taking an oath to protect the country and to obey whatever orders, ever lawful orders they're given. So that oath you're kind of turning your life over when you take an oath or a vow. But you're also stepping into this extraordinary responsibility as soon as you step into that. It's like turning your life over. It's like a surrender, but it's also a profound responsibility. And what's happening in that moment when you promise, whether it's I'll be there at 3:00 or I'm going to do this thing for the rest of my life until the day I die, you are forecasting yourself into the future. So for example, when I got married 22 and a half years ago, I didn't know what it was going to be like to be married for 22 and a half years when I enthusiastically said, yes, I'm going to do it till death do us part. I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. I had no idea how difficult it was actually going to be and how wonderful it was actually going to be. I had no idea what any of it was going to be like. But I was like, yes, I'm all in. And that to me is extraordinary. That's what's like, just still brings me to tears at weddings. And when in the military, seeing people take these vows, take these oaths, make these promises with their lives that they don't actually know what's on the other side of it, but they do it anyway. And that to me is an extraordinary act of faith. Faith in themselves, faith in life unfolding in some way that they trust they're going to be able to continually rise to. So when we give our word to something, like I gave my word 22 years ago, to like at the end of my life, like me as an old lady, like at near my death, still standing next to Peter Campbell, that woman is calling me forward every day. Because I want to, like, one thing that motivates me, I really want to have a 50th anniversary party. Like, I really want to do that. And I got miles to go before I sleep on that one. Like, it's like, you know, it's far away. But she's out there at that party. And every day, I better be working toward her. Because she has done some pretty amazing things. But every day, I have to be preparing myself for that. Like, I got to, if I conduct myself in a pretty, you know, questionable manner, I'm not working toward that party. So every time we give our word, we're forecasting ourselves forward. Now, here's the thing about life, about marriages, about plans, about integrity, about promises, about vows, is they get broken. We break our vows 1,000 times, as the song says. And that's what this reading is really all about. God is saying, you have broken your vow. It was awful. It was terrible what you did. And I want you back. And we're going to do things differently. And we all have that capacity to renew ourselves. To, even though our vows have been broken 1,000 times, doesn't let us off the hook. Doesn't let us say, well, that didn't work out, and so I'm never going to promise anything ever again. No, what it means is that you can create a new covenant. You can restore your integrity, but you have to be honest about where you've been and where the breaking happened. We're not putting icing on a mud pie here, right? We're going to say what actually happened, and that the integrity was broken for the people in Israel to say, we did not honor what we said we were going to do. We did not take care of our own people, and we suffered as a result. We paid the price. So it's important in this conversation of restoring integrity to know what the cost was, to feel the cost. It's an important part of this, to feel what was lost by our vows being broken. What was the cost to ourselves and to others? And then to take that next step, to put the icing on a real cake, not on a mud pie, but to say, yes, we can do this again. And then you forecast yourself again, and again, and again, and you keep living into that future. Return again, return again. Return to the home of your soul. Return again. Return again. Return to the home of your soul. Return to who you are. Return to what you are. Return to where you are, born and reborn again. Return again. Return again. Return to the home of your soul. Let us keep silence for a moment. In the silence, I invite you all to imagine the future that is calling you forward. The promises you are making in your own life to the people and communities that you love. To feel the weight of the promises that have been broken. The messes that may need to still be cleaned up. To imagine the future that you are living into, where there is freedom, where there is justice, where there is love.